world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Last week, Diane talked about the importance of clear communication in a medical emergency. This week, as her 89-year-old father was being rushed to the hospital with chest pain, she was forced to put her own advice to the test.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. So as you know, if you've been listening to this show, my parents, Annette and Joe, are now 88 and 89 years of age, and they live about an hour and a half away from me. And they certainly have had medical issues, you know, both of them, but nothing, no emergencies in the past several years. And as you also know, I'm the only child of theirs that's in the area. I'm about an hour and a half away. And my brother and sister both live in another state. So I logically and you realistically know that it's not going to be quiet on their health, you know, and well-being forever. I know they're 88 and 89, and I see a little, I see the beginning of that frailty evolution starting. But emotionally, you know, I hope it doesn't evolve beyond this point, you know, and I know that we all feel that way, that we hope time stands still and there'll be no more aging progression. You know, as children, I think sometimes we try everything we can to get them back to how they were, you know, we get frustrated when it doesn't work or it doesn't happen. So I just wanted you to know that with all my years of working with the elderly and their children and everything I know and that I've experienced, I still struggle, just as you do at times, with this part of my parents' life cycle, because this is, it's an emotional thing, you know, and no matter how much you know, no matter how much you know, you read in books or how book smart you are or whatever, how professional you are, whatever field you're in, you know, as far as healthcare, it's our parents and we're human. So first of all, emergencies don't arrive with an appointment. They drop into your busy schedule and you have to know, you kind of have to know that, especially with your parents, you know, being the age they are, that these things are going to happen and you kind of have to plan for it. How do you plan for an emergency? But you kind of have to have backup, et cetera. So I want to tell you about my story of Tuesday night. I get home about 7:30 and we're just sitting down to eat dinner and my cell phone rings and it's my mom. And she says, "Oh, we're going to the emergency room." I say, "What do you mean you're going to the emergency room? Who's going to the emergency room?" And she says, "Daddy's doctor called and he said he should go. He wants him to be checked. And he's going to have to stay there and have tests. He told me to drive him there, but I told him I can't drive because I can't see at night." So I said, "What do you mean? Why does he have to go to the emergency room?" "Well, he had a little bit of pain in his chest." So I say to her, "Ma, call 911. Don't be driving anybody to the emergency. Call 911. "No, he's finishing. He's eating now. He's just finishing. And Danielle across the street, they're going to take us, Danielle and Tom." I say, "Mom, if he's having chest pain, call 911. "No, he's got to finish eating. The doctor said I could drive him. He said to me, put your wife on the phone." And I got on the phone and he said, "You drive him." And I said, "But I can't see. I can't drive him." So Danielle and Tom were here at the time with their kids trick-or-treating. Oh, those kids look so cute. You want? They were dressed for Halloween. I gave them pretzels and candy. I go, "Ma, if he's having chest pain, call 911. I will meet you at the emergency room. No, you don't have to come. No, they're going to take us. I said, Mom, if you call 911, they will see him right away. If you walk into the emergency room, he's going to have to wait there. No, no, he's okay. I said, Mom, call 911 and I'll meet you there. So, of course, I hang up. And I say to my husband, we have to go to the emergency room. He goes, well, what? I go, it doesn't make sense. He has chest pain. The doctor called, but drive to the emergency room. Doesn't make sense. Okay, so we arrive at the emergency room. It's like 9:30 at night. And this is a hospital that used to be, you know, a smaller hospital and gradually became bigger and bigger. And it's kind of an inner city hospital now, and it's been bought up by a conglomerate that's buying up every hospital and thing in sight. So, of course, there's construction going on. It's huge. It's beautiful, the building and the outside, but we have no idea where the emergency room is. We find that, but then where do you park? Okay, so it's kind of not conducive, emergency room and parking, but we go into the parking garage and we find out, you know, where to go. So then we have to walk. We have to walk kind of in an awkward way back to the emergency room. We find the desk in the emergency room and I ask, you know, I give my father's name. So the guy gives us tickets and he tells us where to go. So we're wandering through this huge emergency room. I mean, it's like doors and buildings and people running everywhere, and it's very crowded, but there's no one to even ask. And we're wandering. We're going in the direction he said to go in, I think. And we see this woman, and she's looking at us, and she said, can I help you? And she was kind of annoyed. And so I said, yes, we're looking for, you know, this section. You know, my father's in the emergency room. And she said, well, and they sent you this way? And I said, well, yeah, this is the way the guy said to come. And she said, well, okay, well, you go. And then she tells us a whole different way to go. Okay, so we follow what she tells us, and we're walking and walking, and we're like, we're lost. So I said, let's just stop. So I stop at a desk, and there's so many people at desks. And I mean, you know, an emergency department is, you know, for emergencies. So I don't want to stop somebody running. But there's people sitting behind a desk, and, you know, they're working on computers, et cetera. So I stop and I'm waiting for someone to look up, and no one ever looks up at you because nobody wants to stop what they're doing or help you. Finally, a kind soul, she looks up, and I say, can you tell me where my father is? I have no idea where we're going. So she said, okay, what's his name, et cetera. So she, thank God, takes us to my mom and dad, which was very kind. Okay. So there's my dad, you know, laying on a stretcher, and my mom sitting next to him. And my mother looks like she's falling asleep. I mean, because it's, you know, 9:30, it's past their bedtime. So, and they see me and they're like, oh, you didn't have to come. I go, well, of course. I go, Dad, are you having chest pain now? Because he's just sitting there. He's not hooked up to any monitors. And he goes, no, I'm fine. Oh, I go, well, what did the doctor say? Oh, well, we haven't seen a doctor yet. I'm like, you haven't seen a doctor yet? No. My mother, well, they took him and they did tests. My father says they did a cardiogram and they did blood work. So we're just waiting. And my mother says, why? And I didn't know where he was. I was sitting in this room waiting and waiting for an hour. And my father says, yeah, the poor thing. I could see her way across, but she couldn't see me. And I'm trying to wave to her. She's just sitting there, doesn't know what's going on. He said, finally, I stopped someone and said, could you go get her? So I say, okay. I go, well, what happened? I've had this pressure in my chest for 2 days. I go, 2 days? I go, why didn't you call yesterday? Why didn't you call 911 yesterday? And, well, you know, and now I speak to them every day, once a day. My mother will tell me what they had to eat, but she didn't tell me, you know, my father's had chest pain, because if she did, I would have said, well, call 911. So I say, well, why didn't you call yesterday? Oh, my mother, I think it was indigestion. You know, he ate a big bowl, a big bowl of broccoli and macaroni. So I think that's what it was. I say, but if you have any kind of chest pain, you have to call 911. Don't just assume it's indigestion. So I go, okay, so, well, now what happened? Well, you know, so we went to sleep and I woke up and I still felt it. So I said, I'm going to go to the doctor. I called the doctor's office and there's voicemail. There's nobody's answering. It's lunchtime, so I guess they're having lunch. So I decide to drive there. I go, Dad, you're having chest pain, and then you decide to drive to the doctor's office. So he said, well, yeah, I drove there, and I said, did you tell the girl, you know, at the desk that you have chest pain? Yeah, I told her. And I was mad because she made me wait my turn because I didn't have an appointment. So I'm thinking, I can't imagine that someone would make him wait in a cardiologist's office if he walked in and said, I'm having chest pain. So I'm not sure how clearly, you know, he told her that. Well, anyway, he says he sees the doctor, and I don't think he really told the doctor he was having chest pain as well, because I'm sure the cardiologist would have said, call 911. We have to get you to the ER. So I don't know exactly what he told the cardiologist. He tells me he said he had chest pain. But anyway, cardiologist took a cardiogram and blood work. And he said to my father, well, I'll either call you later with the results or I'll see you tomorrow and we'll go over the results. So my father goes home and proceeds to go about his day, and then he's eating dinner, and they're eating dinner, and the cardiologist, that's when he called, it was 7 o'clock, and he says to my father, I want you to go to the ER now, I don't want you to drive, but I want your wife to take you, and, you know, because he said, I want you to have further tests. And this is my father. Well, I wasn't planning on that. I'm just eating. So he says, well, yes, but I want you to go. And, he, you know, I wasn't planning on going. He goes, I wanted to eat. We were just eating. And then I wanted to watch television. So I'm like, okay, so now what happened? So my mother, well, he wanted to talk to me and I got on the phone, but I told him I can't drive. And that's when Danielle was here trick-or-treating. Okay, so that's the backup of how they arrived at the emergency room. But they hadn't seen a doctor yet. So my husband and I go up to someone behind a desk. I'm not sure, you know, who exactly she was. I couldn't read her badge, her ID. But I said to her, geez, you know, my father's there. And, you know, he was brought in with chest pain. I said, but he hasn't seen a doctor yet. So she says to me, well, you know, I'm sorry. You can see how busy we are. He hasn't been assigned a nurse or a doctor yet. So I go, but geez, you know, he's been here from like 7:30 and now it's like 11 o'clock at night. And she says, oh, I know, but we've done the cardiogram and we've done blood work. So he'll be scheduled for blood work again at, 11 o'clock, 11:30. So I'm like, okay. She said, somebody will be there. I'm like, okay. So I go back, you know, and we're waiting and waiting. And, you know, my mom is like practically falling asleep. So I, when we get back from the break, I'll continue the saga.
I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise. And although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always. Lasciatemi
cantare. You're listening to Parents Are Hard to Raise. Now, thanks to our listeners, the most listened to eldercare broadcast the world over. Sono un italiano. Buongiorno Italia, gli spaghetti al dente.
I just want to welcome all of our new listeners from Italy this week. Ciao, benvenuti a tutti. Thank you so much for joining us. So, here we are, continuing. We're waiting and waiting in the emergency room. My mom and dad, my mom is practically falling asleep, and they're saying to my husband and I, you have to go, don't worry, we'll be fine. I'm saying, we haven't even seen a doctor yet. We're fine, we're waiting. And there's this poor woman a few cubicles down, and she's in obviously in pain. She's screaming and she's writhing in pain. She's vomiting. And my father's looking at me saying, what's that noise? And I say, it's somebody, you know, it's someone in pain. She's in pain. And my mother, well, why isn't she seeing a doctor? I said, well, probably they just didn't get to her yet, I guess. And my mother, oh my God, I hope she doesn't have one of those painful diseases. Oh my God. And my father, oh my God, I hope she's not contagious. And I'm like, just, and they're like, she needs to see a doctor. You better go tell the lady over there, go, that lady needs a doctor. I'm like, Mom, sure they know. So finally a doctor did go attend to her. And I'm saying to my mother, a doctor seeing her now. Well, I hope they give her something. That poor lady's in pain. I'm saying, yeah, I'm sure they're going to give her something. Well, the poor thing, they did give her something, but you know, it didn't work immediately. So of course she was still, you could still hear her, right? You know, she was in pain. She was gasping in pain. And so my father and mother are saying, the doctor, what did they give her? It didn't work. They better go give her something else. I'm saying, oh my gosh. To make a long story short, it's 1 o'clock in the morning and my mother is just falling asleep. So my father says, you guys better go. I'm fine. My mother goes, maybe we should. I'm falling asleep. She said, and his cardiologist will be here first thing in the morning. That's what he told me. So I'm, you know, here I am. Well, what do? My mother's fallen asleep. Do I take her home? Do I, you know, wait with my father? So my father's going, go, I'm fine. I know he's not in distress. So I'm like, okay, I better get my mother home. So we start to walk to a certain area and I see, I think it's a physician anyway, a guy in, you know, scrubs, and he's going through all these charts kind of to the entrance to the section that we're in. So I look at him and he's starting to go through these charts and I say to him, are you going into this? Are you a physician going into, you know, this section of the emergency room? And he says, yes. And he picks up a chart and he says, yeah, I'm looking for, and he says my dad's name. And I'm like, oh, thank God. So he looks at me kind of, so we all head back to where my father is. And I say to my father, this is, you know, here's the doctor to see you. So, and the doctor does introduce himself to my father and he starts asking my father questions, but he'll ask my father a question and look to me for the answer. And because you could tell he's in a rush and he just doesn't have any patience. And I get that, you know, it's an emergency room, but, you know, you're talking to an 89-year-old man, so I'm not going to answer the questions. I mean, some of the stuff I'm not even sure of, but I'm not going to answer them because my father's capable of answering them. So I just look at my father, you know, so, but my father, you know, is going to think about the question and take his time in giving the answer. And sometimes he's going to give you information that you might not really need to know, but he doesn't know that. So, you know, he's asking my father, well, what did the pain feel like? When did it start? So my mom tells him, oh, it started yesterday. And he looks at me, looks at them, goes, yesterday? Why didn't you call him? No. And then she proceeds to tell him what my father ate again, the big bowl of broccoli and macaroni. We think it was indigestion. And she proceeds to tell him the whole story. So this poor guy, you could tell, he's like, oh my God. He's looking at me like, somebody give me, you know, some kind of answer that is going to help me. And I said, well, I'm trying to get them to get back to the right story. So then he's asking a little bit about his history. He says to my father, well, I see you've been here, you know, for cancer. You were here. Oh, he says, are you still being treated for that? No, no, I'm in remission. And they, you know, tell him that story. So finally he gets to, you know, the part where, you know, does my dad have a primary physician? Now, of course, my father doesn't. I've been trying to get him, both of them actually, to see a geriatrician because that's what they need. They have, you know, 900 specialists, but not a primary care physician. They have someone they see, but they couldn't think of his name, and he's in one of those doc in the boxes, you know, so he really isn't a primary care physician. And my father goes to the VA as well. And he doesn't really see a doctor there. He sees a nurse practitioner. So then he asks for my father's medications. And thank God, he has a list of his medications. That was one thing he did follow. And he has that, which is good because he couldn't remember, you know, half the medications he's on. And nobody really probably could, you know, in that situation. But you know, when you have, they have that list. And if you listen to last week's show, we have on there, you know, we have on our website, the show was about visiting a physician and what you need to prepare for. But in that, we have medical history. We have on our website sheets that you can fill out before you go to a doctor or records to keep. And medical history is on there, medications, et cetera. So, you know, have your parents obviously keep that paper, bring it to a physician, keep a copy, but also take a copy of that, you know, on your iPhone, take a picture of that. If you can take a picture on your parents' iPhone, if they have one. I know I can do that for my mom. Is she going to be able to retrieve it? No, but somebody, if she goes to a doctor, someone probably could. So we went through all the questions, and after that, you know, my father says to the doctor, did I have a heart attack? And the doctor says, yes, you did, and we have to move you. Now we have to move you to a section that's monitored. So, you know, my husband and I are looking at each other because he only had, you know, one set of blood work, and they said, you know, he had to have another set, and it didn't seem like it was definitive that he actually did have a heart attack. But the doctor now is having us follow, and that he has somebody pushing my father's stretcher, and we're trying to find a room. We're going all over this emergency room, like in a conga line, trying to find a room that's empty with a monitor. We can't find one. So he stops. We're in the middle of a hallway, and he's asking, you know, going from desk to desk saying, we need a monitor. So now they have to move some poor guy out of a room with a monitor, because I guess he didn't need the monitor anymore, and he puts us in there. So then he says, okay, you're scheduled for blood work, etc. So my mother is freaking out because she's like, oh my God, he's had a heart attack. He had a heart attack. You better call your brother and sister. I said, I'm not going to call them yet. You know, it's because it's 2 a.m. now, and I'm not going to call them and tell them he had a heart attack because we really don't know. I go, Ma, I don't think he really had a heart attack yet. We don't know that for sure. That's what the doctor said. I said, but I don't think we really know that for sure. We have to wait. You know, we have to wait. So my father says, okay, I'm in a room now. You guys leave. And my mother's worried that someone's going to steal my father's bag. He has a bag there with, you know, like a robe in it and stuff. I go, Ma, no one's going to steal it. It's attached to his gurney. No one's going to steal his bag. So I give my father my husband's cell number, and I say to him, when the cardiologist comes in the morning, please, you know, give him the cell phone number so that he can call so we know what's going on. Because I know if he just tells my father or my mother, we're not going to know the full story. So I say, please just give him that number. And I'm hoping my father's going to remember. So I want to get my mother home now. So my mother goes, oh, we have to stop for bread. I'm like, it's 2 a.m. What do you mean we have to stop for bread? I go, what's open now and why do you need bread? Because I know my mother, she has bread. I mean, she probably has 15 varieties of bread. So I know she's not starving for bread. She goes, oh, ShopRite's open. I want to get rolls because you might want a sandwich and a cup of coffee when we go home. I'm like, Mom, it's 2 a.m. I don't want a sandwich and a cup of coffee. We have to go. We have to get you. We have to get you upstairs. We have to get you home. And then we have to go. We're like an hour and a half, 2 hours away. Maybe you should sleep here. I'm like, Mom, I can't. Can't sleep here. I have appointments in the morning. So we get Mom home and I go, Mom. She goes, oh, I wish you didn't come. Now you have to drive. I said, Mom, how would you have gotten home? Oh, I would have called Danielle. Danielle told me to call her. I go, Mom, you can't call that poor woman at 2 a.m. and ask her to come, you know, to get you. I said, these people have been so kind to my parents. They really have, because until, you know, if I can't get there for something or until I can get there, I mean, they've been very, very kind. I said, but you can't call them at 2 a.m. I could call a taxi. My mother thinks it's like 1920, you know, with taxis and things. And I said, you're going to call a taxi. I go, Ma, you can't call a taxi and a taxi driver is going to walk you upstairs, this woman all alone. Oh, well, I don't know. I would have figured out something. I would have called my friend Faye. I go, you can't wake up somebody at 2 a.m. Okay. And I said, Ma, we're not going to stop for bread. We don't need it. So we take her home and I can't sleep, of course. By the time I get home, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning and I can't sleep, you know, and then I have to start my day. So I call my mother in the morning. I said, did you hear anything? No. I said, okay. Well, the cardiologist came in, you know, to see my dad about 7 a.m. and he called my husband, which was wonderful. Night, really great man. He called my husband. They were on speakerphone so my father could hear and, you know, my husband and the cardiologist. And he said, well, he did not have a heart attack. He said, but I gave him two choices. He said, I want to do a nuclear stress test and an echocardiogram or an angiogram. He said, because we want to see, you know, what's going on. So my husband says, well, you know, Dad, you know, what do you want to do? My father says, I don't want to have an angiogram. So, you know, they all decided, okay, let's take the conservative route. We'll do the echocardiogram and the nuclear stress test and see what happens. You know, if that is positive, then they have to do the angiogram. If it's not, then, you know, we'll take it from there. So, result, they do that. They do nuclear stress test, and they do the echocardiogram, and it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and my mother calls me, and she says, oh, they're discharging Daddy. I said, all right, well, what did they say? Oh, I don't know, but he called me. They're going to send him home. They have him in the hall because they need that room. So I'm like, okay. I said, well, I'll come up. Oh, no, she said, Danielle's going to take me and go pick him up. I said, well, I don't want the poor woman to have to come and take you. I said, you know, we'll come and get you. No, 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 she's going to pick us up. She's already going to come and get me. I'm like, okay. I said, but what about what they tell you, you know, when he's discharged? Oh, no, we'll find out. We'll know. I said, okay. So to make a long story short, he's home. And I say to them, okay. I said, well, what did they say? Oh, he's very tired. He's very tired. I said, well, of course he is. He didn't sleep the whole night. I said, well, no, of course he didn't. You know, he's in the emergency room. I said, but what did they tell him to do? Oh, no, he's fine. He knows what to do. I said, okay. So I said, Mom, okay, tell him when he makes his appointment or his follow appointment with the cardiologist, let me know, because I wanted my husband to go with him. So this way we understand and we know, you know, what's going on. So she says, oh, okay. So I call her the next morning and I say, well, how's Daddy? Oh, he's on his way to the cardiologist. I said, well, what do you mean he's on his way to the cardiologist? We didn't understand what they told us to do. We didn't understand the medicine, the prescription. So he's going there to talk to the cardiologist about it. I said, but Mom, we wanted to go we wanted to go up so we understand. No, he'll find out. I said, okay, well, could you tell him to call me when he gets back so that I can hopefully have an idea? So to make a long story short, you know, my father comes back and he does call me and he said that he did not, you know, have a heart attack. You know, they think maybe there's some underlying heart disease, or maybe it's from, he has a valve that's starting to become stenotic, or it's from the AFib. So they did change some of his medication. And I said, well, what about your activity? Oh, no, I'm not on any kind of restrictions. I'm like, oh, really? I'm like, okay. And he said, no, and these are the medications. I said, okay, well, make sure now you, I have to give him a form. I said, in the meantime, make sure you write down now because your medications have changed. Oh, yeah, I'll do that. I said, okay. So what are the takeaways from my long, elaborate story? Well, first, emergencies don't arrive with an appointment, so you do have to plan. So use those sheets that we talked about in last week's show. You know, make sure everything is filled out. Make sure they're on your parents' refrigerator. Make sure you have a picture of them. Make sure that if your parents have an iPhone, that there's a picture of them in their iPhone. And if possible, someone has to go with them. Someone has to be their voice to help them understand. Because number two, emergency rooms and hospitals are not elderly friendly. You know, we see that doctors come in and they mean well, but they don't want to listen to all this extraneous information and they just don't have the time for it and things can get lost. So also those sheets, they give you medications, you know, make sure your parents' medications are listed, their doctors, etc. And make sure that they update that, they change that, because that's an important part too. Also, you know, the majority of what I do is I'm a third party. I'm an outsider. It doesn't matter who you are or what you do. 9 out of 10 times your parents aren't going to listen to what you said because you're their son, you're their daughter. So, you know, you may know exactly what to say or what to do, but they're not going to listen to you. That they're going to listen to an outsider. And that's what I do most of the time. And I'm an intermediary. I'm like the bad guy who says, you know, this is what you need to do. My grandfather, I remember my father would say to him, do this, do that. He wouldn't listen to him. My husband would come. And we weren't married at the time. He would listen to whatever my husband said. My father could tell him the same exact thing. My father would sit there with him and say, okay, you know, the doctor said we have to rub Vicks on your chest. I don't know. And he'd say, no, I want, and he wanted my husband to do it. He would wait for my husband to come to do it. I want to ask him. I mean, so, and I guess because my husband, you know, we were dating at the time, so he didn't know him that well. My father, you know, he wasn't going to listen to him. It was his son. And my father, of course, is the same way now with my husband because he knows him so well. So that's very important. You need someone, you know, a professional, someone to be there and to say, you know, this is, yes, I think this is what really you need to do, or this is going to help you, or these are the suggestions I have for you. And finally, if you go to the ER with two Italian parents, be prepared for an adventure. You know, to make a point about all of us struggling, I have a friend who's a physician, and she's dealing right now with her mom and her mom's health issues. And she said to me the other day, I called her to see how her mom was doing, because her mom was just recently hospitalized again. And you know what she said to me? Parents really are hard to raise. I'm so excited. We just got our new ratings this week, and it's official. Parents Are Hard to Raise is now the most listened to elder care show on the planet. And it's all thanks to you. Thank you so much for continuing to spread the word to all your friends on social media and in the real world. Thank you so much again. You're the best. time for my survival tip of the week. Are you stressed out? It's time to go to your happy place and remember a fond memory, like a great vacation. That's the advice of two researchers at Rutgers University. Mental health exercise, they found, will cut a person's stress response by 85%. The study points out that recalling good memories is more effective than mindfulness, which emphasizes concentrating on the present. So thank you so much for listening. If you know someone who can be helped by any of these episodes, please have them subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode, episode 32, at parentsarehardtoraise.org. Please email me at diane@parentsarehardtoraise.org if there's something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in future shows. You can email me through my website, dianeberardi.com. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.